This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, hosted by MC 8 and Big Steel. It's every Thursday,
y'all already know.
A podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangster rap.
Let's go.
Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to A Musical Journey Like No Other, giving you an in-depth, invigorating, and exclusive look at the newest Smashing Pumpkins concept album, Autumn. This is 33 with William Patrick Corgan. This is the 22nd step on this interstellar musical expedition, which is the end of Act 2 of the album. You can now stream both acts of the album on streaming services wherever you like to listen to music. If it's your first time listening to 33, welcome. If you've been with us since the very beginning, thanks for being fans. Thanks for tuning in. On this episode, we're having another world premiere of a song from the album Autumn. We'll be listening to and analyzing the track Spring Times with Smashing Pumpkins frontman Billy Corgan. On this episode, we're going back to 1996 and listening to the song titled The Last Song. It was originally released as a B-side on the 33 CD single, and you can hear the song on the Aeroplane Flies High box set. The song features a guitar solo from Billy's father, and we have a lot to talk about, including his father's criminal past, the crazy story of Billy's father's passing, and how his father lives on in the album Autumn. So we're going without a guest on this episode. Kyle Davis, if people are listening to this episode as it drops this Saturday, the National Wrestling Alliance having our first pay-per-view of 2023, you could pre-order Nuff Said on Fight TV. And if you're in the Tampa area, tickets are available for the NWA Power and NWA USA TV tapings in Tampa Sunday and Monday. Details available at nwatix.com. It's going to be exciting.
It is going to be exciting. I'm glad that you started the plugs, because that's what I'm here to do for this little portion of this. Make sure you like, subscribe, share, rate, and review the podcast wherever you're listening to it. iTunes, Spotify, iHeart app. I don't know. Get your podcast wherever you want to. Make sure you're listening. Make sure you're sharing, and make sure you go over to WPC33.com to continue the conversation. Playlists, lyrics, all the sorts of things about the Smashing Pumpkins music you love. And let me tell you, we've been talking about it. I've alluded to it. We know March 4th, Mexico City, World is a Vampire Festival, but that is not all. We can now talk about the thing I was mentioning before, which is Australia 15-day tour coming up. Jane's Addiction, Emil, as well as the Sniffers. We got Red Hook. We got Rattlesnake. We've got the bigger news for me, National Wrestling Alliance, NWA versus Australia's Greatest. We're going to be a part of that, Joe, unless some really weird things happen. Billy, thank you for that. I'm putting it on the record, so we have to go now. WPC, what you got going on? This is huge news. You're going more international with both of your things, Smashing Pumpkins and the NWA.
Well, for years, people did suggest going back to my early days in the indies and, of course, Dixie Carter at TNA Wrestling, that I try to combine my credibility in music with my credibility in wrestling. But I would often say, never the twain shall meet. Wrestling fans care about wrestling, and rock and roll fans tend to care about rock and roll. There are fans of both, but they tend to be in smaller numbers than you might imagine. So putting the worlds together has always been a challenge for me because I didn't want to impugn the integrity of either side. If I was going to do rock with wrestling, I didn't want the wrestling to feel lesser than. Or in the reverse, if you're going to do wrestling and then you have some music, oftentimes you see where the music feels like a bit of an afterthought or it's not produced very well. In a world of make-believe with real rock stars, it's oftentimes hard to find the balance between the fantastical world of wrestling stars, who are stars, against real-life rock stars who are often playing themselves, although not always. So here we are, very excited to bring these forward in Mexico City and in Australia. So yeah, over the next few months, we'll see approximately 11 events where the NWA is in the international market for the first time in a very, very long time with any sort of real presence. We did some stuff with China a few years back, which was really, really awesome, but it was kind of a one-off event. It wasn't able to be followed up upon, unfortunately. And here now, you'll see real sustain. And I think putting the brands together has been something that the promoters in particular have been very respectfully responsive of, and they see it as a bonus to the festival look for the World is a Vampire as a brand, which is awesome because it means the NWA is bringing something to the table.
I'm getting the logo tattooed on me, by the way. I'm just letting you know that.
But where, Kyle? Where on your body will it be?
Where he sits on the couch.
I'm still on the couch. We're adding another month.
It's a Tookus tattoo?
Yep, we're adding another month. I'm sorry. Tookus tattoo. I'll tell you what. Go hashtag WPC33. Tell me where I should get this tattoo on my body.
Oh my God.
No face tattoos.
Oh, it's going on your neck. Cody Rhodes style. Right there, baby.
All right, let's get back to Autumn, the musical. We're at the end of Act Two. Dramatic. Last time we saw the prime characters here, Ruby and Osyra, they were shooting into space on Dr. Aish's antiquated jetpack, his prepper pack. They make their way out. Osyra passes out in the rush of into space. They survive. And now we're into springtimes. What is springtimes? They land in a field somewhere. Osyra is safe, but still unconscious. And there stands Ruby. Again, the mixture of the Corrine Ruby, the AI showgirl, mixed with the pure consciousness of Shiny, looking down upon this beautiful young person who really does want to change the world. And in that moment, Ruby makes the decision. Da-da-da, drum roll, please. And this is where Springtimes comes in. The song is in the voice of Ruby. Ruby decides to walk away.
So I had a quick question about this. It gave me kind of like a Renaissance vibe. And I wanted to know if that was intentional, where your brain was, just if it accidentally found its way in there.
Renaissance fair?
Narrative. No, just like it had kind of like a classic, I guess like Renaissance era to me, which yes, a Renaissance fair is a weird modern version of that. But I felt like it was people on a hero's journey, kind of like a knight type of thing. By a knight, I mean like a shining knight. I don't know. It just gave me a vibe like it's ending the second act here. And I just thought, what an interesting choice this was.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorting through the Holy Grail, Monty Python.
Yes. But not a joke. But yes, that Holy Grail type of vibe. Like maybe.
I think the word that Kyle's searching for is whimsical. There's a whimsical.
Whimsical.
Vibe
yes.
That
good
that
save,
is different.
Joe.
That's what I'm here for.
That's what he's here for. He's to back me up.
When you're looking at dramatic ways to end something, your first thought is louder is better. Sometimes, though, silence or withdrawing energy away encourages the listener to lean forward. And on an album that doesn't have a lot of quiet moments, which was not planned, it just kind of worked out that way. I think it has a lot to do in hindsight with the din of the modern world. I don't feel there's a lot of quiet in the modern world because most of us are online a lot. So I think it's a reflection of that. So you have this reflective moment where Ruby is staring down at Osyra, has as much empathy as a robot AI system can have for this young person, does the brain calculus, and decides the best thing for Osyra and the best thing for Shiny, who is now known to the world floating back to Earth. It's all over the world. The news is that Shiny's returning for reasons unknown. Ruby makes the calculus to walk away and basically exclude Osyra from what happens next. It's a decision similar to Dr. Aish's, but in this case, you're on your own because if you come with me, something bad's going to happen to you. I don't really care what happens to me, the robot, because I'm a robot. So you can't really kill a robot if you really think about it. You can unplug the robot, but you can't kill a robot. And so in this sort of hyper-consciousness, which gets into transhumanism and other issues which are now coming to the fore, and you're going to hear more and more about that on a daily basis. One of the big conversations on social media right now is the chatbot. I don't know if you've seen, people are talking about AI systems now and how a bunch of people, writers, are going to lose their jobs because they no longer need people to write the news. They could just literally feed it into the chatbot. And there's a lot of controversy because the chatbot has political bias in it. If you ask the chatbot to write about one person, the chatbot says, I can't get involved in politics. And then if you ask it to write about another politician, it writes this hosanna about how great the person is. If you want to look that up, I want to stay out of the political end of the spectrum on this. So Ruby makes the decision to leave Osira be. So disempowers Osira from their own agency to decide what they want to do. And by Ruby walking away, makes the decision, okay, you're out of the story now, kid. I'm off on my own, ostensibly to find Shiny. And so that's what you see and hear and feel, even though I'm going to talk later about the actual true recording of the song. What you see and feel in this moment is Ruby walking away with the young person laying in the tall grass of a field, and you feel that sense of separation. It's not a sense of loss. It's a sense of like, I'm going to go this way and you're going to go that way.
You know, you mentioned Shiny also with the chatbot thing. I did pitch to Joe to do a press release with the chatbot, but he said, no, I'm going to do this by myself. But for Shiny, coming back to Earth, obviously the narrative earlier was that he had been forgotten and pushed aside. So with people aware that this individual is coming, kind of give us a precursor to the third segment of Autumn. Is this going to be a thing where people are looking at him as like this mythical being coming back because we never knew he existed up in this point? Now we've been reminded in this. Is he a messiah of sorts coming back to the people? Give us a little teaser.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Ooh. If this mythical character existed, then was erased, and then is reacknowledged by the government of the world, in this case, the X and I, how does the public perceive that person's return? Some people would be mad. Some people would be intrigued. Some people would say, who cares? But the fact that it's acknowledged by a system that goes out of its way to erase personalities like Shiny is basically admitting that Shiny has more power in this particular moment than the X and I. And the X and I has endorsed Shiny's return on a public level. So as Shiny floats back, here the X and I is waiting, but in a positive frame of mind now. That's the public part of it. We know privately that the X and I is still hunting down Osira and Ruby. So you have the dichotomy of the public face of the government, the private face of the government, how it's playing in public. And to the public, to use the wrestling parlance, Shiny is now a baby face returning Earth. It's presented as sort of a heroic return, but you need to follow the rest of the story to kind of know how that goes.
I think that's a good note for us to take a quick break. When we come back, you'll be listening to the world premiere of Springtime.
Well, actually, sorry to interrupt you. It's already on streaming services.
Oh, there you go. The podcast premiere of Springtime's coming up right after the break.
Very exciting.
Now available for pre-order at MadamZuzus.com. The autographed 4LP box set of Autumn, the new album by The Smashing Pumpkin. This 4LP colored vinyl pressing is limited to 1,333 units and will be machine numbered and autographed by The Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Corgan, Jimmy Chamberlain, James Iha, and Jeff Schroeder. The limited edition box set includes the 3-act, 33-song rock opera That Is Autumn and 10 exclusive unreleased songs over the course of 5 7-inch singles that will not be available for streaming or found anywhere else. Go to MadamZuzus.com to pre-order today. Free shipping in the USA. 3-unit limit per order. Pre-order will ship after April 21st, 2023.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, a podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap. Hosted by MC8 and Big Steels every Thursday, each episode provides an in-depth exploration into the formative artists, monumental albums, and socio-political factors that have shaped gangsta rap from its emergence in the 80s to its enduring impact today. Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form. We dive into the socio-cultural aspects that gangsta rap boldly addressed, from police brutality to systemic racism, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the profound cultural significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's go.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, it's spring and autumn. As Osyra and Ruby descend to the earth, and Ruby makes the momentous decision to leave Osaya where she lay. So, it's not the world premiere, and I was heartened to see that the minute this song came out in Australia, because for some reason it comes out there first because of time zones and stuff like that, that somebody was already covering the song online. That is an amazing thing. So to whoever covered the song first, kudos to you, young person. Springtime's by the Smashing Pumpkins.
Posey Field, she drifts alone. The sleep of owls and gramophones. She wound me up, so I ramble on to meet her savior, wick and tongue. Yes, I've been noticed, I've been shot, and how I know lace in this at your heart. Ooh, ooh, it's springtime out there where we part. Springtime out there, that's where we part. Thank you. it's another warm day with stars that swirl as bright leaves. And like another warm day where we began, as we'll end, love our sun, our sexton, love as one.
Welcome back, music fans. You just listened to the world premiere of Spring Times. And Billy, I understand like there's a really big overarching connection that we talked about. We teased a little bit in the first third of our broadcast here. Let's dive into that.
Well, you know, there are those stories that you tell that they need a little bit of dramatic license to make them more interesting than they are. I mean, isn't that what a movie is? It sort of takes reality and puffs it up. And there are those moments in life where it's so surreal what's happened or happening that you can't believe it's real. And you think, I'm going to remember this day for the rest of my life. So the last act of recording for Spring Times was the guitar solos that happen at the end. Imagine I'm in the studio with Howard. It's a beautiful day. I'm setting up to record. And I look at my phone in between takes on something. I'm getting ready to play some guitar work on this whole song. And I get a call from my brother. Now, my brother is the exact opposite of me. He does not talk barely at all. So you can do the math on that. So when my brother calls me, I get nervous because I think something bad has happened because that's the only time he ever calls me, which isn't always the case, but usually the case. I remember one time my brother called me and I said, is there a problem? And he said, yeah. I said, what is it? He goes, Google Dad. And I go, what? And he goes, Google Dad. And our father had been arrested in Tampa, Florida, of all places, where we're having our where we're having our pay-per-view. Enough said. February 11th, if you want to watch on pay-per-view on Fight. My father had been arrested with a Crown Royal bag full of heroin, 17 felony X counts, and was looking at many years in jail. That was what Googling Dad got me. So on this particular day, the day of recording Spring Times, and again, I'm just about to finish up the track. It's the end of Act Two. I'm very excited. I mostly work linearly, so you can almost see where I am in the recording process here. You know, I'm basically two-thirds of the way done. I got some momentum going. This is a very long process to get here. My brother sends a message, give me a call. Uh-oh. I call him and he goes, Dad's passed away. And I'm like, what? Dad passed away. What happened? Well, he was in the bathroom, something his wife heard. A fall. She went and looked, and he had had a heart attack. Paramedics came, pronounced him dead on the scene, and they've taken him away. So, you know, it's that thing of like, whoa, wait a second. Dad's dead. Wait, hold on, what? And then in the maelstrom of information, somehow I was like, wait, so Dad got taken away by the paramedics, but his wife stayed at the house. Yeah, she's at the house, if you want to call her. Now, to give a little context on my father's wife, this is his third wife, Cheryl, who I've known since I was 8 years old. I met her when she was my father's mistress. He used to take us out to lunch and say, "This is my friend, Cheryl." So I've known Cheryl over 46, 7 years. They've been together 46 years or something and did get married at some point. And so really was my father's soulmate in life. So, you know, even though we joke about her starting as the mistress, she turned out to be the wife that endured, where the other two, my mother being one of them, did not. I call his wife, this is her, again, her partner for life. She started with him when she was 18 years old. So she's completely hysterical, sobbing, you know, can barely make out the words. And I'm just trying to get information and also obviously console her. I'm still dealing with the fact that my father is gone quite suddenly. I mean, he had been ill for years, but he told me since I was about 5 years old that he was dying. This is one of his running gags. I'm dying. I'm always dying. So the fact that he actually died was like, whoa, wait, he really died this time? And he, you know, I think my father told me he was shot at 9 times and stabbed 3 times. I'm not sure if he ever overdosed on drugs. So who knows? But let's...
I'm sorry to interject, sure. But is all of this legit? Were you ever able to verify that your father wasn't just big fish tall-tailing you for a lot of things? Because he seems... These stories are amazing.
Yeah, it's like your dad was Suge Knight or something.
Well, I want to say he was sort of a small-time criminal in amongst being a great musician. Those are stories probably for the book. But no, I would say probably 80% of what came out of my father's mouth involving his life of criminality was probably true. In fact, a lot of the stories he told me, he would make them sanitized for my listening pleasure. And then years later, when I got older into my 40s, he started telling me the real stories, which were far more horrific and crazy. In fact, I told a story infamously on Joe Rogan about the time he was doing a drug deal and a guy put a gun at his ribs. And my father told the guy, "Go ahead and shoot me. You'll be doing me a favor." And the guy got nervous and started shaking and got out of the car. That is absolutely a true story.
This explains so much about you as a person, right?
Well,
now,
I think it doesn't explain so much about my behavior. It's more my mentality. And I think that's something that's...
No, that's...
Thank you. That's hard for people to understand if they don't know my family. I'm actually the sane one in my family. I know that's hard to believe. I come from pretty spirited, crazy, and emotional people. My father's family used to tell me stories, and still I hear the stories about how the brothers, his brothers, would go out on Christmas Day to prove who was tougher, and the family would watch through the window on Christmas Day as the two brothers would go out in the snow and beat each other bloody to see who was tougher. And this was like an acceptable thing in my family.
And that anyway, was your love of professional wrestling. It was born.
Way to throw in the plug. February 11th. Enough said. Sold out in Tampa, but you can watch on pay-per-view.
There are still tickets available for the TV taping Sunday and Monday. Ticket information available at nwatix.com. Thanks, folks.
Fight.tv to order.
Thank you. So back to the story. I'm calling my father's now widow. You know, oh my God, your father, you know, he hadn't been feeling well. I heard him collapse. I went in. He wasn't breathing. I called the paramedics, da-da-da. They tried to revive him, blah-blah-blah. So I'm like, you know, you're just like, oh my God. You know, you're having that, wow, my father's really gone. This is crazy. And then amongst all the incoherent, you know, grieving, which again, I get it. She said something about, they got a faint heartbeat, so he might still be alive. Okay, like, I wish we had the, you know, hit the brakes sound effect. Maybe Howard can put that in. I'm like, wait a second, he's still alive? Well, he might be still alive. So now I'm like, wait, you didn't go in the ambulance. He might still be alive. What? I don't know. He's dead. Don't let him go. You know, I'm like, okay. So I hang up the phone. Now I look at Howard. Howard's like, what's going on? He can hear the conversation. I'm like, and Howard knew my dad a bit. My dad's dead. Howard's like, do you want to stop? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, it hasn't really hit me yet. So let's just keep working because, and now he might be alive. So Howard's like, are you sure? Like, we could just shut it down for the day. I was like, no, let me just make this other call. So now I'm thinking I got to try to find, she doesn't know what hospital he's at. So speaking of Google, I'm on Google and I'm looking where they live and I look at the nearest, you know, like, what's the closest hospital? So I cold call the emergency room of the nearest hospital. You know, hello, emergency. I'm like, hey, this is kind of weird. Please don't hang up on me. I think my father might be there. I tell him the story quickly. And the guy goes, And I go, I really want to know if my dad's still alive because, you know, and the guy goes, and the guy, I don't think he knew who I was. This wasn't like I got the celebrity hookup. Which does come in handy sometimes. And the guy goes, hey, look, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but your father is here and he is alive. But it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. So I don't want to give you any kind of false hope, but he is here. I see him as I'm talking to you and he is still alive. Oh my God. Are you kidding me? So I call my brother back first because, you know, I got to tell him first. He's like, oh my God. And then we're like laughing, like, of course he's still alive. Like, this is drama. This is dad drama. So then I call the wife back. Oh my God. Praise God. He's still alive. Okay. So now I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Because for context here, geographically, how far away are you?
Well, I'm in Chicago.
You're in Chicago and they're where?
Sorry. My father's south of Tampa, Florida.
Oh, wow. So this is,
yeah. So if it's dire, the timing of this. Yeah.
And if you want to do even crazier 6 degrees of separation, the city that my father lived in Tampa, Florida, is the same city that Howard's mother lived in when she retired.
Wow.
So even sometimes when Howard would go there to visit his mother, he'd stop by and visit my father because my father really liked Howard. And that says a lot about Howard. anyway, so I look at Howard and I'm like, all right, well, he's still alive. Howard's like, well, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, if I hop on a plane by the time I get there, I don't know. I kind of want to get some more facts. So now we're back to working. About half hour goes by. My brother calls back. He's like, look, my wife and I are going to jump in the car. We're going to get over there so we can oversee his care because his wife is so out of it at this point. There's a sense that maybe she wouldn't make the best medical decisions, which again, all respect, you're a grieving widow, you know, your life partner, 46 years, you know, obviously legally it's her decision, but my brother can be trusted to kind of make the assessment. So they jump in the car with the kids and there, my brother lives by Fort Lauderdale. So he's trying to make this 4-hour drive across the state. So this is happening. Now I'm back to recording. So the day goes on and I, you know, of course I'm working and I'm doing a little bit of guitar work on the song, but it's a weird thing. You know, you're meditating on, well, is dad dead? No, he's alive, but is he going to die? And if he does live, is he going to be in a coma? He certainly had a stroke. Is he going to? I start thinking, oh man, my father, the way he is, if he's disabled in any way, I mean, I don't mean to be glib, but the way my father's mind worked would be even if he survived, if he was in a particularly impaired state, he might take his life. So I'm like almost thinking it through, like, are we setting up into a different type of drama where now he's going to be super miserable and going to have to deal with that. You know, again, this is the mind of somebody who's not in his right mind. That's me. Okay, we get towards the end of the evening. The sun's starting to go down a little bit. Now we're going to play the solos at the end, which you just heard. And I want to play this one guitar, which is a Gibson 335 12 string. Really beautiful sound. But as those guitars are, the intonation can be funny. The strings are kind of rusted. So I hand the guitar to Nicola, our assistant. I say, hey, can you change these strings? But I'm going to work out the guitar part with this other guitar. So I play the other guitar, and it actually sounds really good. I believe it's a Reverend that I have. So I play the solo, and you know, it takes a minute to get the sound. I play it, so I do one take of the solo. And Howard and I listen back to it, and we go, oh, that's pretty good, you know? And, you know, the whole time I'm playing the solo, I'm thinking of my father, the whole time. And Howard says, like, should we just let it be? Like, it sounds pretty good. And just as we're talking about, should we leave it, keep it, here comes Nick with the guitar that I wanted to play. So I go, you know what, let's try a take with this other guitar. And Howard says, do you want me to leave the first guitar in while you play? I said, no, I think I can do better, I think. So I'm just about to do the second take. I get the sound, everything, here we go. He's just about to press record, phone rings. It's my brother, dad's dead. What? Oh my God. Yeah, they put him in a helicopter to fly him to another hospital. So he died in the helicopter being transported. Now I have questions which are like, why was he in a what? He's helicopter? What? Well, he didn't make it. Okay, it's official. He's dead. Yes, he's dead. So he lasted another 4 hours or whatever. And this is just as my brother's getting there and the whole thing. So they're literally walking to the hospital that he's not at. Because he was there. Now the wife's freaking out again. My brother, who's very stoic, he breaks down. So it's super emotional. So I get off this phone call and I say to Howard, you know, my good friend, And I'm like, okay, now he's really gone. Because there was this false hope, you know, what we would call in wrestling a hope spot. Howard's like, okay, do you want to shut it down now? And I'm like, no, you know what? I'm ready. It still hasn't totally hit me. Let's go ahead and do this one more take with this guitar. Then we'll shut it down. Howard says, okay, presses record. I play the solo. It's beautiful, right? I'm thinking my father again the whole time. I finish the solo. We listen back and it's pretty good. So I say, you know what? Let's listen to the other solo. So now we're doing the eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Which one's better? We listen back and forth. We can't make up our mind. I go to Howard, you know what? Put them both in. Just put them both in. Maybe something magical happened. He puts the one guitar in the left channel, and I'm getting chills now saying it. He puts the other guitar in the right channel, and we listen back, and it's perfect. That's what's on the recording. Let me tell you, just from a technical point of view, to play two guitar solos without listening to them 20 minutes apart with two different guitars, two different intonations and tunings, and to have it match up as if it was meant to be is a miracle. It's a one in a million shot. And everything you hear there is exactly as I played it. So, you know, we finish listening and I look at Howard and he looks at me and we're like, that's just unbelievable. And I thought, okay, that's an interesting tribute. And it struck me in the moment. And this is the poetry that came into my heart, which is like, that's me and my father. He played guitar his way. I played sort of like him, but my own way. And we were connected by the guitar. That was our greatest thing that we ever shared. And yet it sort of intertwines and works in harmony and then goes apart and comes back together. And I thought that's a perfect musical tribute to my father because I couldn't do it better, because that pretty much in musical language explained the nature of our relationship.
A lot of people would say in those moments that they kind of feel, you know, the spirit of that person kind of coursing through them. Did you have any of that while you were playing? I know you're saying that you were thinking about it, but I don't know how, you know, the musical brain works where you're playing music, but you're also having thoughts that are, I don't know which side of the brain is working and how all that is, but was there, do you think there was a spiritual connection there while you were playing that?
I do. I think that the human mind struggles for a literal translation of the magical aspect of spirituality and divinity. The way I interpret musical value on a spiritual level is I'm playing and I'm an instrument. So the instrument of me is playing the instrument of the guitar in this case, or in some cases I'm singing or both. And then energies pass through me. So it might shock you to know that at different times on stage with the Smashing Pumpkins in front of 15,000 people, I might think of Joe Galli getting engaged or the things that Kyle is going through his life, and those energies will pass through me. Now, who is speaking through me? Is it the energy of my memory? Is it your ancestors? Is it angels? Is it the resonant frequency of the earth that I'm connecting with that connects me to you? I have no idea. But I can tell you that playing music at a high level, which I can't say I'm always at a high level, but I have had those moments, energies pass through you that are not of your own. They're distinctly different. Some are higher and sometimes they're lower, more animalistic. I would say a rock concert tends to pass through more animalistic energies and then higher octave energies, which approach everything from megalomania to we are all one.
Well, I think that there's always that connection, and we see it a lot with how people do, you know, the sound bath therapies and the vibrations that people get through those, just through those sounds, and not so much in thinking of it as like a musical experience, but just the vibration that goes through it and you can feel it in your body and you hear it, obviously, that there is that connection that you make with whether it's yourself or the world around you through that vibration.
Well, I think that's the beautiful thing. And I think that's where people get it twisted. When you say that, and I say it, that the music comes from God through you, here's the point that's personal. It's my interpretation of those energies. So if you take my supposition as accurate, and I've certainly had tens of thousands of hours of experience in this particular space, and it is kind of meditative, like the river of information flows through me, memory, whatever, God, even if you just want to say you're thinking of the time you stub your toe, I have to interpret that and I have to give that a musical value moment to moment to moment. So what I hear, and every time I hear these solos at the end of Springtimes, I am not only transported back to the moment that I played these things and the intense energy of the day of my father's passing, which, you know, all jokes aside, anytime there's a birth or a death, it is a significant event in our lives. You know, things will never be the same, right? Not only am I transported back to those values, I'm reminded of something that I could never express in, you know, 100 hours on this podcast, which is my very complicated relationship with my father. And my relationship in music was even more complicated. It's easy to make jokes about my dad, the drug dealer, and my dad, the rascal. But my father, the musician, was a super, super complicated thing. What's beautiful is somehow in this moment, very simple, acoustic guitar, little bit of strings, two guitars, I'm able to say something that I can't say here.
It opens up that opportunity that I think you're right. And I think it's something that a lot of people struggle with, to find the ways to communicate with that. And you having the connection to music allows you to be able to have that experience that I feel a lot of people probably suffer from and they struggle with, because they maybe don't have the expertise or the talent or the outlet to find that way to interpret what they're going through in that moment.
Yeah, I think that's the cruel part about music. I'm sensitive to this because I don't want to be the guy standing there waving a flag saying, I made it, you didn't. But what I do say, because as you can imagine, I've had hundreds of these conversations over the years where a parent comes up and says, my son or daughter wants to play music. Do you have any advice? And I give them, you know, without repeating it here, I give them the best advice I could give a parent that I would have wanted my parents or myself to receive at 16 or 18 years old. But the thing I always say at the end, because I think it's important to say, is the one thing you cannot control is talent. And I do believe talent is a God-given thing. Somebody might argue with me and say it's just a genetic malfunction. You know what I mean? Because I certainly didn't win the NBA lottery. You know what I mean? I didn't get all the pretty awards. You know what I mean? But what I did get is something that I can't explain. I don't know why I have it and somebody else doesn't. I'll tell you a quick story, and it's a good way to end the segment. It involves my father. I was complaining once to my father about a fellow musician, and I expected my father to sympathize with me. And I was doing the normal, like, oh my God, this guy can't get this thing that I want him to do, or whatever. It was just a typical teen complaint. And my father said, huh, yeah, it's easy for you. It ain't so easy for them. You know, I thought, well, that's kind of a weird thing to say. He goes, no, you don't understand. That stuff you do on the guitar, that's easy for you. You have the talent. It's easy. You don't understand how hard it actually is. And I was still a little bit lost in the point. He goes, you don't know this, but I used to watch you shoot baskets outside when you'd play on the driveway. Okay, well, I didn't think he gave a you know what about me playing anything. So I was surprised by this. And he goes, yeah, you know what I used to watch you do? You used to shoot baskets with both hands. And I was like, you saw that? And he goes, yeah, you're basically ambidextrous, right? And I said, yeah, probably 85-90% close enough. He goes, yeah, so you could shoot baskets with both hands. That was pretty easy for you, right? And I said, generally, yeah. He goes, that's you on the guitar. Do you understand? Most people just don't have that. And he said, look, I've been playing for 40 years or whatever he would say. And I'm telling you, only so many people have that ability. There's a lot of people who can play the guitar, but there aren't a lot of guitar players. As a guitar player of a guitar player, I had to understand what he meant, and it taught me a lesson in a particular form of humility. It's not to reduce myself and say, well, I should be like the guy who can't play or the girl who can't play. It's to understand that I've been given something that's just not of myself, and I shouldn't walk around like I'm the greatest thing on sliced bread because I'm better doing this one thing or two things than all the rest of ye.
That's good to have that empathy about, just because I'm have a skill other people might have a skill I don't have. So try to kind of see where other people are coming from. I think that's a great, great message and a really good lesson for everybody listening to this.
Whenever I get the rap from journalists, you know, because through the years, they try to drop the A word on me, not the one you're thinking of, the arrogant word. I'd say, look, I'm not out there telling you I'm an opera singer or a great chef. You know what I mean? I'm talking about what I'm good at, which is why you're here interviewing me, right? Like, do we have to play this weird game where I pretend that I'm not good at what I do so you think I'm something I'm not? And that's always weird to me because, listen, I've been to Indy races, F1 races, World Cup games. When I see people, Michael Jordan, when I see people perform at the highest level in their gift, I'm in awe. I'm in awe. I saw the Michael Jordan game where he had the flu and he scored whatever 36 points against Utah to basically didn't cinch the series, but basically put Utah away from in his second to last year when he was with the Bulls. I mean, the guy was dying. He was green. He was literally green gray. I was 5 feet away from the Bulls bench. You see that level of focus, ability, willpower, and physical. I mean, I'm not sitting there thinking, yeah, that could be me. Hey, Mike, you should have gone the other way with the layup. I mean, so that's why I don't understand when people come at me like that. Like criticizing, fine. If you don't like it, whatever, that's all good. But when people try to tell you how to do your gig, that's always beyond me.
I think that's a good note for us to continue on. We're going to take a quick break right here. When we come back, we'll be listening to the last song. This is 33 with William Patrick Corgan. We'll be right back.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, a podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap. Hosted by MC 8 and Big Steels every Thursday, each episode provides an in-depth exploration into the formative artists, monumental albums, and socio-political factors that have shaped gangsta rap from its emergence in the 80s to its enduring impact today. Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form. We dive into the socio-cultural aspects that gangsta rap boldly addressed, from police brutality to systemic racism, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the profound cultural significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the lesson. This is the lesson I'll sing for you. This is the lesson. This is the lesson I can give you. The roaring sea sleeps. Metal fingers clutching dirty sheets. And no one comes to free in this place where the angels sleep. This is the
back, music fans. You just listened to the last song, and you know, we talked a lot about Billy and your relationship with your father, and this song obviously has a huge connection with your father, since your father actually plays on the track.
Yeah, we had done some stuff together when I was very young. In the early days of the band, he was kind of weird about my recording career, but by the mid-90s, especially with the success of Melancholy, he kind of came back to the other side, and now he was my friend and fan. So I got this kind of romantic notion of like, oh, I'll have Daddy play on a song. I was working at a local studio. It was one of the last songs that we recorded for the Melancholy B-sides, of which there were 28. So 28 on the album, 28 B-sides, totally insane period of my life recording. I think it was 57 songs in total.
Yeah, not like now.
There was a Joy Division. No, 50, seven songs over 2 years is a good roll. I think the Joy Division song was the 57th. It was a Joy Division tribute album. Happy to see that Joy Division has finally been nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that August and without dispute institution. But we'll skip past the joke on that. But happy to see that Hookie and the gang are finally going in, one of the most influential bands in rock history, and certainly the music has endured. So very, very happy to see this. Back to what I was saying. Oh, yes, my father in the studio. Now, you got to remember, I'm 29 years old. I'm a grown man. I've been married once. I own my own house. And I'm thinking, oh, I'll just have my dad in to play on this track. So I record the track. The drums were actually recorded in Australia, which we're going to with the NWA if you want to get another plug-in. World is a Vampire Festival heading to Australia in April, and there'll be NWA Wrestling versus great Australian talent also on the show. Back to the story. Drums recorded in Australia. I think at this point Jimmy had left the band, but I'm going to put music on. I record all the music. I think I even did the vocal. And then there's a solo opportunity at the end, and I think I'll get Dad to play on the song. I ask him, sure, he comes down. He brought his guitar, which I now own, which is a story for another day. I had an amp that I knew that he would like. He set the amp up, and he started playing. Now, you got to remember, at this point, I've produced a ton of hit singles. I think I know everything I'm doing. I listen to my dad start playing, and he's playing, and I'm thinking, oh, this is not working. And I kind of do the thing of like, you know, it's... If you could just, I'm doing the nice version of, and he gets kind of frustrated with me and kind of, well, what do you want? You know, like I'm playing it the way I feel. And he gets unhappy with what I'm saying. And I get a little bit more aggressive, like, hey, you know, I'm just trying to get out of you what I need. I would do the same. You know, I give him the speech I give every other musician. He ain't hearing that. You know, I'm not telling him how to play music. Unfortunately, I had him do a few takes. It reached a point where he wasn't going to listen to me, and I had got enough. So then I said, okay, we're good. Hugged him goodbye. And then I had to sit there for an hour and figure out how to take what he had done and kind of jigger it around through multiple takes. And so that's what you hear. So the beautiful thing when I hear this song is it's really nice to hear my father play. He played a particular way, and you do get an instance of that. I think my disappointment, and I think that was somewhat evident in the recording session, was my father was a fantastic guitar player, and you don't really hear how great a guitar player he is in this situation. To be fair, if that was me in the reverse and somebody threw me in a session and expected me in 30 minutes to figure it all out, play my absolute best, and impress them and make them happy at the same time, I would tell you that's probably not going to work. But in my naivete, thinking, oh, it's my dad, and so it stands again as some sort of testament to our relationship. And unfortunately, I think this is the only surviving thing that I have of us playing together outside of maybe one blues song that he did when I was like 16 and I'm playing on it quite terribly.
Billy, let me ask you this real quick. You say your father played differently. For us that, you know, Kyle and myself were not musicians, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's a little bit of a guitar nerd type of thing, but he had a very kind of Albert King, Carlos Santana type attack. So if you listen to those guitar players, that was his form of attack. He had great melodicism in his playing, fantastic timing, great rhythm. And so having heard my father play at the highest level, it would be like saying, did you see that quarterback play? Yeah, he had a good game. It was like, no, have you seen him when he's great? What would be the difference in that? Well, he threw seven touchdowns instead of one. It's hard to quantify, but you do get glimpses of my father's melodicism and sort of the beauty in his playing. But again, it's not, I wish it was this amazing, I could point to and say, see, I'm not crazy. And one nice thing is in my life, because of me being public, in fact, one gentleman comes to mind who played with my father in the late 60s and whose wife used to babysit me when they would play in the guy's garage. So my father, this guy that my father used to play with will stop at Zuzu sometimes. And he even gave me a picture of my father and him in a band that they were in like about 68, 69. It's nice when I do meet people who knew my father and can attest to the fact of what a great musician he is. I think the problem is we live in a world where everybody's great all the time. All the pictures are filtered. Everybody looks fantastic all the time. So to differentiate who's great, we tend to look at like, well, who sold things or who achieved a higher level. I think if there's any complication to the narrative that we've had the last few weeks for me, and this is part of the grieving process, when you look at Lisa Marie's life and you look at my father's life, is I was able to see that there was a greatness in the person, but at the end of the day, the world judges them on whether or not they were able to achieve that greatness in a public forum at the highest levels. In Lisa's case, she was able to have some successful records released, and people can go back and listen how amazing her voice was and understand it when I say there's an untapped potential there and there could have been a greater opportunity there. With my father, I mean, outside of this little solo he plays here at the end of the song, there's not a lot I could point to because I don't think there's any commercially released music that's out that features my father's playing.
It's very sweet and fantastic, but also speaks to the life you've had where you get to have something that the entire world can share. That is a moment of just you and your father having this, like a little memento of this was the life, the thing we shared together was music, also family. Another great thing about this song too, which I find interesting and kismet, is that to tie it in, we're on the 33 podcast, and this song was originally released as a B-side on 33, the US and UK maxi single CD.
This is why you get paid the big bucks, Kyle, because you're putting these synapses together for the general public.
Connections.
They're on their treadmill, they're going to shop for groceries, they're staring at my poster on the wall from 1996. There's some connection here, and you're bringing that all together. Sorry, I don't mean
to. And if you're in the bathroom, we're talking to you too.
I don't mean to be sarcastic. I'm so grateful if you're listening. I think that's enough information for today. We'll keep it crisp and light, and hopefully this will be the end of the death cycle part of the podcast as we go hurling towards Act 3 and all the surprises it holds. Any predictions for Act 3 from both of you? I think that'll be a good way to end.
I think that you just mentioned the death, but also there's usually a rebirth. So maybe we're going to, like a phoenix rising from the ashes, see all of the things that we've built this far grow, flourish, and build to a bright future.
Or
you're going to end this horribly and just rip the rug right out, and then part four of your space opera. I'm sure there's, again, I'm just picturing this story is going to keep on going and keep on building, and I like it. So you might swerve us, and we might have a, what was the second Star Wars movie where everything ended horribly?
Empire
Maybe
Strikes
that's
Back.
What happens. There we go. You could tell I'm a comic book guy, not a Star Wars guy.
But A New Hope ended positively. A New Hope had the positive ending, and then The Empire Strikes Back. So this is the A New Hope section if we were going to do the trilogy and compare it to Star Wars.
Well, there is the distinct possibility here that Osira ends up living on her mother's couch. Joe, any predictions?
My prediction is that Kyle will one day get off of his mother's couch and live a flourishing life in a residence of his own and be a very happy man. But as far as the story structure goes, look, you've made it very clear that, you know, there's an Autumn 2 potentially already being created, so you have to be able to continue that story, but there needs to be that satisfying ending. I'm thinking of it as my old, you know, back when I was at California State University, Northridge, studying to be a screenwriter, where does the hero's journey take us, and where do we get back to where we need to be, and where does Shiny end up at the end of this story, but also leave the window open to continue the next story? It's a crazy space journey, and I'm just happy to be on it.
I love that.
Save the cat.
We'll talk to you next week as we jump into Act 3 of Autumn. And for those that don't know, because I do see the difference on social media when the acts are released, Act 2 is now available on all the streaming services. So if you want to hear Act 1 and Act 2 in sequence, which I know many fans are doing now, now's your chance and to really enjoy and start to dive in. And the beautiful part, as you know, I like to be right, I'm seeing now whereas people get a chance to listen to the album and really absorb it, and I think this podcast has certainly helped that particular journey. People are starting to find other songs that maybe on first listen they didn't connect with because it is the Smashing Pumpkins, and if it doesn't sound like Rat in the Cage, well, for half the audience, that tends to be a problem. We'll be back next week. Thank you. Goodbye.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, hosted by MC8 and Big Steel. It's every Thursday, podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap.
Let's go.
Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.